It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. As we get closer to the midterm elections, all eyes are on political races that will decide the party makeup of the U.S. Congress. Depending on what voters in states like Wisconsin do, Republicans will either continue to control both the House and Senate, or Democrats could take control of one or both.
People across the world are waiting to see what happens, and it's the job of our next guest to help them understand a political system they may not be familiar with. James Kumarasamy is one of the presenters of the BBC NewsHour. It's heard here at 9 a.m. Kumarasamy was in the Midwest last week and this to report on the state of the electorate, first in Nebraska and then here in Wisconsin. He had a chance to visit with us to talk about his reporting trip. James Kumarasamy, welcome back to the show.
Lovely to be back, Bonnie.
So why are you here? What are you doing in the U.S.? Normally you're in London.
I am. You might not have noticed, but there are some elections coming up in America. Perhaps you've noticed. I'm sure you have.
Just a little, yeah.
So I used to be based in the United States, and I love coming back to America. I come back not just around election season, but we decided with the midterms coming up and so much interest in what's going to happen, whether Congress will flip, what it means for the Trump presidency. Let's come back to Wisconsin. It's a state we've been to quite a bit, actually. I think I've been on the show before when I was here about 4 years ago, but certainly since 2016, when Wisconsin suddenly became one of these states that had a pivotal role in getting Donald Trump elected, we've come back to kind of look at what's going on, whether this is a state that is going to flip back, what the people in some of those counties that voted overwhelmingly for President Obama and then overwhelmingly for President Trump, where they're coming from now, are they changing their views? So we've been to Grant County, which we slightly adopted around the time of the State of the Union address in January, to go back and talk to some of the folks we met. Do they still feel the same way about President Trump? How do the rural communities feel about, for example, the tariffs? Are they going to vote in the midterm elections? And we're here in Milwaukee because we also want to get the urban picture, the kind of statewide picture, talking to statewide officials, hopefully some of the national political characters who are coming into the state to stump for various candidates, and of course to talk to regular folks about, you know, what's motivating them. Is it going to be different this time?
So what have you found so far? How are people feeling, particularly in the rural areas? Because those were the ones that had, as you said, had voted blue in 2008 and 2012 and then went very red.
Look, you know, I'm just here for a few days.
You can't do a deep analysis?
All I can do is a snapshot. And, you know, my impression is that attitudes haven't really changed. Certainly the people we spoke to are digging their heels in and are very pro-Trump, and the ones who were before at least are pro-Trump. One interesting nuance I picked up is actually some of the younger people we spoke to before are feeling a bit more conflicted. You know, they say, look, I'm a Republican. There's a lot of what he does I don't like, I feel uncomfortable with. And that feeling is crystallized. But farmers we've spoken to before say, yeah, we're taking the hit. It's tough at the moment. The tariffs are not helping. But we've got to get a level playing field. We've got to get, you know, China has to understand we're not going to be pushed around. And they, you know, that is certainly what we're hearing. And I've just come from Nebraska, again, you know, very rural state, hearing similar things, that actually farmers for the moment say, yeah, This is fine. We're used to tough times, and for the moment at least, we'll stick with the president.
Are you seeing or hearing anything different in the urban areas?
Yeah, I haven't spent too much time. Certainly, you know, we've just arrived in Milwaukee, so we haven't really spoken to people here. But for example, we're in Nebraska's 2nd congressional district, where there's a very interesting race going on between a progressive Democrat and a, you know, pretty down the middle Republican. And, you know, people we're talking to there are feeling that actually, you know, there is clearly some energy with the Democratic Party at the moment. And, you know, interestingly, they've gone for a progressive candidate in somewhere like Nebraska, even if it's a purple part of the state. And, you know, she was written off in the primary, and she's, at the moment, the polls are suggesting she's got an uphill battle in the next couple of weeks, but she's raising a lot more money at the moment. There's funding momentum, and people are a bit more excited. So there is yes, this is about, for the world listening, it's, you know, what's going to happen in the next 2 years of the Trump presidency? Will there be a Democratic House? Possibly, less likely, Senate, to have a, more of a check and balance on what he's doing. But there's also the question of where the both parties stand, you know, within themselves. You know, Republicans who feel uncomfortable about the president's demeanor, the president's tweets. Do they stick on board? Are they enthused? And Democrats wondering who is the leader of our party at the moment. That still seems to be an issue that hasn't been resolved from 2016.
No, it hasn't at all. And in some ways, I think it's even less clear, at least with the Democrats. There seems to be a lot of movement, but not anything's risen to the top yet. Do you find it difficult from the NewsHour perspective to try to explain what's going on here to the rest of the world? I mean, do people say, what on earth are they doing?
There's a lot of that, I have to say. People still look at a country through the prism of its leader, through the prism of the president. And he's not a conventional president by any standards. So, yeah, I think our role partly in these kind of trips when we come is to dig under the surface a bit, to talk to individuals. I think, you know, someone who spent 5 years reporting from the United States before I became a host, it was only really when I lived here I started to really appreciate the differences between states, within states. It's something you can't always get across without doing a lot of reporting, and sadly I don't have the time to do as much as I'd like. But even in a short trip like this, we try to get those nuances across and to people to hear voices that are not standard fare, that get beyond the political sound bites. And, you know, so our report from Platteville in the west of the state, we went to an event, a College Republicans event, and we spoke to people. I mean, the head of the College Republicans at that university, a young woman, and she clearly, and it came out in the interview, is conflicted. I think she used that word herself. You know, she's the head of the College Republicans. She's very conflicted about the president and what he's done and how women are treated in America. I spoke to another young woman. She says we shouldn't have pulled out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement. I'm a Republican. I'm proud to be a Republican, but that was wrong. So these are the sort of voices I think that sometimes get drowned out with all the noise around the president, a lot of which he creates himself very deliberately for political reasons. But for me, as someone who A, wants to get under the skin of what's happening, but also wants to give our listeners around the world a more nuanced view of America, those are the important voices to hear, I feel.
I think so, too. I think a lot of the moderates in both parties don't get the voices heard because it doesn't make good sound bites, you know, and we in the media are guilty of going for, oh, that's a great sound bite, let's grab that. But you have these people who might be fiscally conservative but socially liberal who don't seem to have a place anymore here, or at least not a named place. It's not like a place where you can say, okay, the Democrats were this and this is what they stood for. The Republicans were this is what they stood for. And now it seems to be kind of all over the place, which is hard for us here too.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if things have flipped. You know, you definitely had a reaction and, you know, we in the UK know all about, you know, populist vote. You know, Brexit very much was a reaction to all sorts of different things that probably can't go into in a short interview. But it was, to a certain extent, it was people who felt their voices weren't being heard and were able in a very direct way to express their frustration with policies that the government had implemented, the direction of the country, how they saw things being changed, whether culturally, whether in terms of their own identity, and had not been consulted about it and didn't have an outlet. And suddenly they had an outlet. And to a certain extent, you saw that in America. And now we have this strange situation where actually, there are other people who previously perhaps did have a voice who now feel they haven't got an outlet for it. So, you know, is there a way to get everyone to have a say and to hear the entirety of public opinion? Now, it's the sort of thing we on public radio stations try to do. And that's part of our mission, I guess, is to make sure everyone has a way of expressing in a civil way their point of view.
I just got back from Germany, and we were talking about this off mic, about the rise of right-wing populism in Europe. Certainly here, you know, we have the alt-right. When you're looking at that from your perspective in London and around the world, does it concern you as much as it concerned a lot of the people I spoke to in Germany? They were horrified at the rise of this essentially neo-Nazi movement in their country that they thought they had gotten rid of.
Yeah, I mean, it's the difficulty is, isn't it, when people in millions are voting for these parties in democracies, how do you react to it? You have to be very careful in the language you use. Would we say we're horrified? No. And, you know, you call out certain policies in interviews with officials, you give a historical context, but it's an issue we have to deal with every day. Where does this fit into not just a broader global picture, but a historical sweep? The sort of comparisons that are made, are they valid? Is this a moment? Is this dangerous for democracy? I don't think there are any simple answers to this, but you have to, I think, just show the same journalistic rigor that you would in any other circumstance and not take sides, but at the same time not ignore when certain norms are being transgressed.
A lot of ire was thrown at the press after here, at least after the 2016 elections, that in the interests of being so fair, that the press legitimized certain things that perhaps shouldn't have been legitimized by giving it equal time, by giving it equal weight. How do you balance that as a presenter and as an organization?
It's certainly something we've faced as well in the BBC, the Brexit campaign, perhaps coverage of other issues like climate change. There's been criticism. I think you take it on board. I mean, there's a lot of self-questioning at the BBC. I think people did come out from the Brexit vote and say, did we do a good job? Did we question some of the facts on both sides, or the suppositions or the predictions or the narratives well enough? And you go back and do better if you feel that there have been shortcomings. But yeah, I think when we stop questioning what we're doing, then that's a sorry state of affairs. We should always be doing that, and we should be trying to not equate fairness with a lack of inquiry.
And it's also a very dangerous time for journalists. Journalists are being raped, murdered. I mean, it's really kind of terrifying to look at the world stage and to know when you're trying to do exactly what you're saying that in some cases you are literally in danger.
Yes, and there have been too many cases recently that have illustrated that very vividly, and yet people continue to stick their necks out to do that. And I think our job is, A, to let those voices be heard, to facilitate that, to do our own reporting. And a lot of my colleagues report from incredibly dangerous countries and situations. And, you know, the BBC still gives people the support and the ability to get to those countries. And my colleague Lise Doucette's in Afghanistan at the moment. My other colleague Ola Geerin was in Yemen this week, reporting on, from pretty harder places to get to and hard to report from. But the BBC realizes, I think, that if we don't report from those places, we're just not serving the public or our listeners, because the world is a dangerous place, and we do have to take some risks.
Exactly as you said before, you have to be, and we have to be, out there trying to find the truth.
Yeah, in a world where facts perhaps are less valued than they have been in the past, it's important to make sure journalism is fact-based, but is engaging and entertaining. Because the other aspect, again, we've talked about this off mic, is how to get the younger generation interested, engaged in civic matters, whether it's on a local national or a global scale. So we try to put more emphasis perhaps on some of the digital storytelling. I know, you know, NPR station's been very good on that as well. We have to keep thinking, don't we? We have to keep alive to how what we're doing matters and engages with the audience without talking down to them, without turning them off or sounding too ivory tower-like, but at the same time does give the depth that I think people want. They're on social media. That's one aspect. The here and now, the quick sound bites. But I think there is underlying in society across the world a bit of a thirst and hunger that actually we're losing out somehow by there being too much emphasis on that. That there is room for longer reads, longer listens, longer watches that try and explain and not always explain. You know, sometimes things can't be explained until after the fact, but grapple with some of the big issues that all our countries are facing.
James, it has been always such a pleasure to have you here. Good luck with your fact-finding.
Bonnie, nice to be here too. Thank you.
James Kumarasamy is one of the hosts of the BBC News Hour. He was in Wisconsin over the past couple of weeks to conduct a series of interviews and spoke with us then. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.